Ventura, welcome to Get Moving TV. I'm Dr. Chris Landon, and I serve as your host. I have an interest in cars. I have a Morgan that I saw when I was 12 years old and said, when I grow up, I'm going to have one of those. And then I said, oh, I'm grown up. I guess it's time. But it doesn't just, I don't want to just sit in the garage. So you look around, there's different cars and coffee now. COVID has kind of slowed a lot of that down in terms of people getting together. But there's a nice open activity at the Murphy Auto Museum. And we have the Mullins Auto Museum. Ventura is filled with people who have cars in their garage. And it was there that I met this man who's walking over the side, over the curbs, and having the coffee just like I was. And he joins me today. This is the legendary Johnny Martinez, the wicked guy. So we're, you know, just talking. He's a very modest guy, and he was kind enough to invite me to his garage, where we spent 4.5 hours kind of talking about life and love and pursuit of happiness.
A lot of things.
So, which is kind of where we started, the first 60 years of your life. What kept you amused during the first 60 years? And we'll start with age 60 after that.
Well, I mean, I was like everybody else when I was growing up. I was the youngest in the neighborhood as far as that. A lot of the kids in the neighborhood were older than me, so I used to pick my idols, you know, who was the coolest guy at the time. But I lived a really good childhood, you know. It was just a normal child. I grew up in the 50s. I was born in 52, so my first 10 years were what we did in the 50s. I went to school. I had cool friends. When I was able to drive, I wanted a cool car. I was interested in cars as a kid, so when I was in high school, I got a cool car. That's what you did in high school, at least my friends, and we all had cool cars. I didn't know what was going to happen with cool cars. I got into construction after I got out of school. I got married. Bought a house early in life, had two kids. I was working hard, still had an interest in cars, and when I had the opportunity to buy a car or have a cool car in my married life, I found this beat up, broken down Model A truck that I thought I could wrench around with, and I worked on it for a lot of years. We had the earthquake, that put it on a slow burner. And eventually a back burner, and I didn't do anything for a while, but I got back working on it, and we had a couple of major health issues, my wife and I, that halted everything in life, everything. When I was able to get back on the 29 Ford truck that I have, I went full bore with it and finished it, had a lot of help, and I wanted to go to the car shows like some of these guys did, and I wanted to be one of those guys, and I did that. And the first show I did, major show, well, I did some small shows in between, but the first major show I did was the Grand Nationals in 2011, biggest show in the nation, and I bombed. And that was okay because there was a magazine article coming out on a feature article coming out on my ride, and they write about that and about me a little bit, and so I thought, well, I had done everything I wanted to do, only to be invited to go back in 2013 and win the show. So now I'm on the crest. I've done what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. It was the dream, and thought I was all finished. That's when I picked up a pinstriping brush. My interest in cars went in the pinstripe direction. It was iconic. It was a hot rod thing. It was around from way back, and I wanted to learn how to do it. And my car show life kept going. My car kept winning and winning and more winning, far beyond what I thought it would do. And in the meantime, I was keening my skills as a pinstriper, and I was meeting people, and I was meeting other artists. And I self-taught myself how to do this. My mentor was a gentleman named Rick Grendel, who's no longer with us. So after he passed, I was on my own. I had to figure it all out. And there again, just something I wanted to learn how to do. Never was it in my mind to do what it did. And it coincided one with the other, and it's an incredible thing.
But when we were talking, I mean, you know, I read Carcraft and Rod and Custom, and I'd make my little mirrors and my little model cars and my little stanchions around it.
You bet.
And there you are doing the real thing. But just how people's, I mean, you took a right-hand turn to do pinstriping, and then found whatever artistic skill.
I did. The car thing really is what started it all. I didn't know that my car life, my interest in my car, I didn't know my car was going to do what it did. And it brought me to so many different things. I thought that that's all there was to it, you know? And I had this idea to maybe learn how to pinstripe. When I started to self-teach myself, I was age 60. That's insane. And to have a steady hand and I could still see straight, you know, that was the first two things I learned I could still do. And but when I started doing that, all of a sudden, you know, you're in it, and you're being asked to stripe at shows, you're being asked to do things, and there was times when I could almost feel like I could step away from myself and see all this going on. And I don't know how anyone else does it, but that's how it happened with me, and it happened in such a short time to do what I'm doing right now for the people or for the situations that I've done. So it was pretty crazy.
Did you have beautiful handwriting in high school? Or I mean,
I did not. I was not a good student. I didn't have good handwriting. I would mix my lower caps, my lower lowercase letters with my uppercase letters when I wrote things. The best I could do was draw stick figures. I could draw cars on paper that were just boxes with round wheels. I mean, I didn't have anything like that. And yet, I picked up a brush, and inside of 14 months, I think somebody wanted to buy something from me, and it just went from there.
Now, when you say something, what kinds of things do you pinstripe?
When I started striping, I was striping on pieces of wood. I would get a piece of wood, I'd sand it, I'd router the edges, and I'd put a Varathane finish, and I'd stripe it. And somebody had seen something like that I had done and wanted to buy it. So I said, well, I don't know what to charge for that, you know? What do you do with that? And that's how it started. And then I see a piece of glass, and I thought, well, maybe I'll do that. And that's when I started learning that everything was pinstripable. You could stripe anything if the paint stuck. And in 14 months, I think I sold one or two pieces, and it just went from there.
What's the most unusual thing you've pinstriped, I guess?
Well, I think the most unusual thing I've striped were two urns that a lady had asked me to do. She was losing her husband. Fortunately, I got to meet him about a year prior to him passing. He was dying, and he told his wife, I want you to take these two urns and take him to Johnny Martinez and have him stripe these things. I want him to do that. And one will go to you, one will go to our daughter. And so she brought those to me. She called me and said she had an unusual request, but she brought those to me. That's probably the most out of the ordinary thing I've ever done, you know?
Yeah, you were kind enough to invite me out to your garage, and I'm looking at I go, oh, that's one, two, three, okay, that's three, Oakland, okay, and and then you just started pulling out drawers filled with winning things, and then there are these bowling pins.
How did you
get started in the bowling pins?
Well, years back when I would go to these car shows, or my wife would go, we'd see the pinheads, they called them, and we'd see these bowling pins striped, and it took a little bit, but soon I learned it had nothing to do with bowling, none at all. And this old timer told me they stand straight, they're a good piece to paint on, and they present well. Well, they do, but when you try to paint them, they're a little bit oddball to do. And I remember doing my first one, and it didn't look half bad. I think to date I've painted well over 200 pins right now, and I got known for that early on in my striping. When I started to learn how to stripe, that's what I became known for, were the bowling pins. That was my niche, I guess, if you will.
Well, I see, and you're wearing a shirt, which.
I have a friend down south, and I say old timer or like that. I guess I'm an old timer now too. He's a very good friend of mine. If I might say his name, Chuck Schawecker. He's a seasoned car guy, and he's got a very unusual car that he bought that was built in Japan. And we became friends. I would see this car in magazines, and I would see it at shows, and I knew it was a famous car. And I'd get a glimpse of him. At first, I didn't know who he was. And anyway, we had an opportunity to meet and become good friends. But he used to wear a shirt with a picture of his car on it. And he says to me, John, he says, you need shirts. You need shirts. That's part of how it works here. He says, that's what you do. And I said, well, what kind of shirt? He says, you get shirts made, print with your car, your name, whatever. And I said, okay. So I go home and I tell my wife, I says, I got to get shirts printed. You know, she thought I was, I think, probably a little nuts. But that's what I did. A whole nother series of shirts that are no longer. And then I started pinstriping. And when it started getting real serious, my daughter said, you going to do some kind of a name or something so people know who you are? Because you're doing a lot of stuff for a lot of people. And you're striping in a booth at shows. So what are they going to do? Come up on you, and they're not going to know what you do or who you are. So that was the beginning of my shirt thing with Chuck. And then I started doing these pinstripe shirts, and that's what I've been doing since as far as that, you know.
And I see the word wicked. So where did wicked come from?
Well, when I was going to Grand Nationals for the first time in 2011, I went to my pinstriper, and I says, Rick, I need a show sign because I'm going to show my car. And he says, well, a show sign, what's it going to say? I said, well, I don't know. I mean, that's what you do. You've got to have a sign, you know? And so he says, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I don't know. How about wicked? Wicked something. He said, wicked what? And I says, well, my truck is satin black, maybe wicked satin, you know, something. And he says, how about wicked satin? That doesn't, I said, well, how about wicked suede? He goes, how about wicked in suede? And I said, yeah, that sounds pretty good. So that became my title to my car when I showed it. So when the striping thing came into play, wicked seemed like the appropriate thing to call this stuff. So that's where it came from. And it,
there goes the wicked guy.
Kind of, well, yeah, then somebody one day at a show called me the wicked man, and that kind of stuck. I hear that once in a while. Some folks made me a club jacket, a logo I designed for them, and they made me a club jacket, and right there on the side they've got the wicked man. So you know, sometimes that's what I hear.
Yeah, you to cast good light on their club too, I'm sure. Well, so you've won the Grand Nationals, you've had your car, you've had your lack of success. This is the pinnacle of my life. This is my bucket list. I'm going to Grand Nationals, and then you win. So what happened right around then?
Well, I won the Grand Nationals in 2013 after 11 when I bombed. I went inside a different building in 13 and I won that. I would have never dreamed and thought that I would win it again 2 years later. And I went back to Nationals in 16 and I won it a second time. I was also nominated to compete for the Perseverance Award at Grand Nationals in 16. I wasn't going to bring my ride. The promoter of the show said I had to, that was part of why they gave the Perseverance Award away. I won a second time with my 29. I actually took second place to a brand new build that took first, which was an honorable second place because this was a famous build that this guy did. And I was still good enough with my truck that had, I think it had 13, 14,000 miles on it. It was still worthy enough to take second, runner up to this guy. I won the Perseverance Award.
So who, the Perseverance Award, what's that, who else, who'd won it previously, and we'll talk about your big day.
I was the third recipient of that award, as I was told, and I was told it was the second highest award at Grand Nationals. And it's based on someone who, while building a hot rod, while building a car, they have a major setback, a health catastrophe. Nothing about lack of money or anything, just a health issue. And I was told by somebody that one of the recipients prior to me was building a car with his son, and his son had been killed while building, helping his dad. So that man was nominated for that award. I was chosen based on the cancer that I suffered. My wife suffered cancer in 01, and in 05, I was diagnosed with cancer. And this was all during my build. And the Television Motion Picture Car Club, Stephen Young is the one that came up with this award and would present it every year there. And I was a member of that group at the time. And my video was done on me that told a little bit about my cancer and my wife's cancer. And he thought that that was pretty moving. And so he suggested that I be nominated for that. And so they don't tell you how many people are running for that, but I ran for that award. And just moments before I was brought up for that, I was brought up stage for the second place win. So that was my second win with Grand Nationals. Never realizing that I had the tough luck story of the show, and they brought me up and I won that.
Well, we talked about that day. All of a sudden we're you know, teenagers, know everybody's looking at us, and we don't know how to walk or talk or anything. And then we grow up and we get more used to, you know, being social and like. So when they called out your name, what was that like for you?
For the Perseverance Award,
yeah.
Well, it led up slowly and it led up emotionally. And I hope I don't start babbling right here.
You babble away.
I knew I was in contention for that. There's a big screen that's on the side of the stage that they put your picture of your car on, and so that they can put a car to the face of the guy that's going up to win. So when they called my name for my car's up there, and I couldn't believe I won it a second time. I thought, not second, not even third. I mean, I've got miles on this thing. They weaned into the story of the Perseverance Award and what it meant, and then they started talking about the individual whose wife suffered cancer first, and then him 4 years later. Right then and there, you know. And my wife is sitting next to me, and I everything just inside of me just went down to my feet. I had no structure in me, you know. I was ready to just puddle down, you know. And they called my name, and I got up, and I walked, and then I had to stop and hold something because I knew what it was for. And I had won this thing. This is a guy that came from nowhere that just wanted a cool car. So he won Grand Nationals in 2013. Wow, you know, you're that hero for 6 minutes, you know. Then I get a chance to go back to Grand Nationals and say in 16 to compete again. Well, geez, that's the big deal. Also knowing that I was competing for the Perseverance, but I said, oh no, that's not even up in here. That's way out of my thinking. And then I get called for it. I it took me a while to get to the steps because
you've got 2,000 people clapping and cheering, and
they're all right there. They're all builders, car enthusiasts, vendors, pro guys, garage guys. There's entertainers there. Everybody that you can think of is there. I got a standing ovation, and I saw it through pictures that were taken. There was faces there of people I see in magazines, the heroes, and they were standing there for me, but you don't see that. And they wanted me to talk. I could barely do that. It was surreal.
We were talking, and someone had to kind of help you up onto the stage, and they said, you know, like, gosh, here you've got 2,000 people, and you're, I don't know, probably everything's a little hazy anyway, and the announcer, what did the announcer say to you, and what did you say back?
When I was up there?
Yes, we need you to say something. Say something to these 2,000 people.
He says to me, he leans into me, John Buck, Grand National, the owner of the show, he leans into me. He knew who I was from previous shows. He leans into me and he says, Johnny, they wanna hear something from you. And I thought to myself, what do I say? He says, say anything, but they want to hear you. And I think the only thing I come out of my mouth, I think that I can remember, was I only wanted a second chance, you know, in life. And that was all that I got. Everybody just started clapping. And I was looking right at him, and I didn't see a thing. Nothing, you know.
Yes.
It was pretty exciting. I'll never forget it.
Yeah.
So we never.
Jellyfish. Barely getting some words out, and those were the right words.
Yeah. It was, that was 2016. I returned in 2019. One more time, and I won it again. I won it again. And it was just exciting then as it was the first time. I might add, these little parking lot car shows that we all see around from time to time and like that. I always took it when I was called up, when I won those little shows. And by now, there was people at some of these shows that knew me. They knew my history. And they would look at me and they say, what the heck is he doing here? This guy's a Grand National guy. There's that truck. That's a Grand National winner. And I would walk up and someone said to me one time, why do you go to these shows? You know, and I said, when you win one of these shows, that this show is just as big to me as the Grand Nationals, because you're the guy that day, you know, and it means just as much to me, that little show, as the big ones. And that's how I see it.
Well, I've seen your truck. I dive right to the undercarriage because that's where the
that's where
the real money is. I mean, not fine upholstery, fine, but yeah, that's it. So generally, it means there's some people helping you out.
There was. I was on the tail end of my chemotherapy. I did hard chemotherapy treatment, and I enlisted a local shop to help me out because I was dwindling in health. I was dwindling in energy, and I was slowly getting to where I wasn't going to be able to do anything at all. And I reached that point. I had nothing left. So they helped me out with all the things that I couldn't do, and we finished it. And I wanted to finish it, and I wanted to drive it. And I knew I was going to be okay. I knew that I was going to get healed, but it was going to be a tough process. And we did it. You know, we did it. I did it. And of course, that was the basis for the Perseverance Award, you know.
Yeah. And now, your truck was satin black at one point.
It was satin black.
And then how did that progress? And who's your painter for the 2019?
Well, a young lady by the name of Cecile Buckmeyer out of Canada. She painted that red paint job. I was asked to attend at the Costa Mesa Fairgrounds, the Cruising for the Cure, and I was invited to be in the McGuire Hangar, which is a very elite part of the show. I was invited to be in there. Going back to satin black, we went with red, as a surprise. And Cecile Buckmeyer happened to see my truck, saw my video, showed it in her classroom back in Canada, didn't know when she was talking to me that I was that guy. And she says, I've got to paint this truck. And I wasn't sure about that. Young lady, she was 26 years old, and just cute girl.
Yeah.
And I says, I don't know, a custom car painter? I don't think so. And she painted it for me, and that's why we did it.
That's a beautiful thing. You even rolled back the cover for me and left it there, and I'm trying to look at you and not just the car.
Yeah.
So how can we help you? I mean, you're really helping people succeed here. Just hearing the story of your life and the right-hand turn that we can reinvent ourselves, regenerate ourselves.
The people have come up to me and they say, I want to be you. I want to be a striper. Mm-hmm. And I say, well, if that's what you want to do, do it. Don't be me. Be a striper if that's what you want to do. Just do it. Don't be afraid. I don't know why it happened for me. I don't know. I don't know why I've done what I've done. I've met wonderful people along the way. I don't know why. I know that... when somebody stops to ask me something, I take the time and I talk with them. They want to see something, I show them. I don't have no secrets. I'm pretty transparent that way. I try to stay right down here. I don't try to get up in the light. It's a lot of fun being in the light. But I try to stay, within my means. I try to keep my attitude. I try to keep myself grounded.
Thank you, Johnny. Ventura, take the time. Stop, talk to people. You get a second chance. Get moving.